Welcome to the Time Bubble Podcast, the only podcast where the guests get to travel in time. I'm your host, Jason Ayres, and I'm joined today by my good friend, Gemma Parnell.
Hi.
Hello. Now, how long have we known each other now? Is it a couple of years?
Yeah, I think it's been a couple of years.
Yes, because I've lived in Evesham about 5 years, and I think you've been here a little bit longer than that, haven't you?
I've been here 9 years nearly.
Is it nine? Wow.
Yeah.
So we sort of got to know each other last year, sort of kind of around the lockdown time, really, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. I think as we were coming out of it.
It was, almost, yes. Yeah. We used to meet up down at Abbey Park, which is the nice bit of Evesham, you could say.
It is beautiful, isn't it?
It is beautiful down there. Shame we can't probably say the same for the whole town, but no, we'd better not trash talk our own town too much.
And we both moved here from a similar area, so we both chose to come here.
Yeah, you were, was it Milton Keynes, Leighton Buzzard, that way? Yeah. I came over from Oxfordshire, largely because we wanted a sort of quieter pace of life, and the cost of living's much cheaper over here too.
It is.
Once you get out of that London commuter belt, it makes quite a difference. And I wanted to get a bigger place with a growing family, which is where we are now, actually.
The same, really. I was in a two-bedroom flat, and I moved up here into a four-bedroom house, so that was quite a shock.
Yeah, yes, similar. It's great, we've got plenty of space in here. I should, for the benefit of the listeners, today's episode is quite unusual because I normally record these with people on Zoom from all over the place. I mean, I had one guy from New York a few weeks ago. But I've actually got Gemma here with me in the studio today. And when I say the studio, I do mean the dining room. But I like to say the studio because it makes it sound more professional.
Yeah.
With cups of coffee. Yeah. So it's all quite informal, really.
Yeah.
Okay. So you've listened to a few of the episodes of this.
I have.
So you know what to expect. I do feel sometimes I put people on the spot a bit with these questions and they're not quite sure what to say. But how it generally tends to work is I'll ask a question, somebody will come up with an idea and it will spark a conversation. We're going to ask you to talk about 3 days or 3 periods of your life where you would like to maybe go and revisit or reimagine. Where would you go first?
I'd like to go back to when I became a parent, and that was before I moved here.
Okay.
We went to a mum and tot group, which closed down, and we decided that we would just have coffee at each other's houses. And little did we know how incredibly lucky we were, because every single Friday, all of us would meet at someone's house, and we just created a massive community. And I didn't actually realise how valuable that was until our kids grew up, we went our different ways, I moved away. And I noticed when I had children sort of a few years later that, I was really lucky. That's not just a given that you have kids and you manage to find lots of good friends that you can spend every day with, even the go shopping together and just spending time together. And I think that part of my life really showed me that the value of community. And it does upset me that we live in a world now where community is almost being destroyed. I don't mean like community, but we all live in our house now on our own, and we have tribes with one or two adults in. So I'd love to go back to those days where I would text my friends, "What are you doing today?" And they'd turn up at 9 a.m. and it wasn't because we had anything interesting to do. We'd be killing time. The children would be playing.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. It is so easy to go from a position where you have this community and all these people, and then suddenly you're isolated. It can happen to people if they maybe are made redundant from a job or they move to a different area. And we particularly, I mean, if you look at the lockdowns and things 2 years ago,
yeah,
where everybody sort of started moving to using Zoom and things like that. And now the world's gone back to normal, but a lot of people haven't. They're still doing things in the sort of COVID way.
Yeah, I think some people, it has sort of changed their life, the COVID, whether it's changed their career, just their outlook, getting used to being on your own,
yeah,
for a start. It sort of almost becomes natural that you're just on your own, and you almost forget that you still have,
yeah,
some community.
Yeah, and we need to find ways to try and recreate that. So from my own perspective, two events really. So I used to work in business, in market research. So I was always surrounded by work colleagues and going to conferences and all these different sort of things. So when I came out of that, that was quite a shock to the system. That was before I had a family and kids. So I threw myself into my social life. So sort of going out a lot, I was doing quite a lot of DJing and stuff at the time. And then the kids came along and I had a similar experience to you. Now, the unusual thing at that time for us was that my wife was working full time for the NHS.
Yeah.
I was doing a combination of writing and DJing for a living. So I was going out sort of Friday, Saturday, Sunday nights to clubs and weddings and thing, and that sort of thing. And then looking after the kids in the day. So I had the same thing as you had, the community. So it started off when my oldest was sort of 18 months, sort of going to these, I suppose you could call them mother and baby type groups.
Yeah.
That would probably be frowned upon now. We'd have to say parent and baby, wouldn't we? But this, so we're talking around about 2008, 2009, and I was the only man at these groups, which is quite interesting,
yeah,
because there was a lot of talk then about, oh, you know, there's more dads doing the primary role, but there really wasn't. And I was, I mean, slightly daunted, because you'd go in this place, I'd feel so comfortable because there would be women sort of like breastfeeding in there, which is the most natural thing in the,
yeah,
world. But
yeah,
as a man in the room, you would be thinking, you know, you don't want to sort of...
I hope they're not worried
that I'm here to perv on them or something.
Yeah.
But I found I got on very well with the mums. And then when the kids, we progressed on to nursery and primary school. And I did have that sense of community that you
yeah,
talk about. And I used to love, you know, the pickup at the end of the school day, just sort of the chatting to everybody in the playground,
yes,
and while we're waiting for the kids to come out. And that was a really enjoyable time of my life, really, because I was doing that by day and then, you know, the DJing and the adult stuff at night. So it was a fun time. But of course, those times come to an end.
Yeah.
So when we moved over here to Evesham, my kids were older by then. The eldest one had already started secondary school. The younger one was in year three, I think. So
okay,
I was still going there. But when I went to the new school, I was coming into an environment where the groups of parents were already established, so to,
yes,
speak. We hadn't all started on
that
first day
life
of school.
Yes.
I found it quite difficult to integrate, really. I mean, I used to chat to people, but
yeah,
it wasn't the same. And then, of course, I was sort of feverishly working away on the books here. And it was quite difficult, really, when I first came here. I mean, I did the thing that I always do, as people know me, which was head for the pub, which is where, you know, many of my friendships developed. But really, it was quite difficult for a couple of years. And interestingly, since the whole COVID times, that sort of woke me up to the isolation, because everybody else was suddenly in the same boat the way I'd been living.
Yes,
quite a few years.
I did feel like, you guys get to,
yeah,
see what I've been going through the last couple,
yeah,
of years. Not in a happy you're going through it, but I was like, I already feel this isolated. It didn't feel,
yeah,
like an awful lot of change. But even I don't like doing the school run, but I missed that, because that was,
yeah,
where you get to talk to people.
Yeah.
I found when I had my first two children back in 2007 and 2008, before like social media was a huge thing and before people had smartphones, and you had to go to a mum and tot group. If you wanted to ask someone advice, you had to go to a parent, a sister, or a friend to, you know, how do I potty train? How do I get them to sleep? And then I had children again in 2014. And so I sort of had my younger ones had sort of gone to school. Yeah. Then I had another baby, and it was extremely different. I still went to a group. I still spoke to other parents, but it never went as deep. It was quite shallow, because it's almost like people didn't have as much need, because we've got the internet. Those tools are amazing.
Well, we wouldn't be able to do this podcast
exactly.
without it.
Exactly. Yeah. But I do worry that it can't replace actual community around you, people around you supporting you, people that you can talk to.
I don't have it so much here where I immediately live. What the lockdowns taught me is that we shouldn't take freedom for granted. And since then, I've made a real effort to seek out people that think the same way as I do, that believe in freedom and of expression, and just getting out there and meeting people. And I've made new friends all over the country, really.
And
we've got together, and we've had, I mean, a couple of weeks ago, I was down in Torquay, and I met up with Flora B and her husband, who were on an earlier episode, and we had a wonderful evening out at a restaurant there. And many of the guests that have been on this podcast are new friends that I've made over the last 2 years. And, you know, it's something I really value. And it, of course, in my case, I know your children are younger, so this time will come for you. My boys are 15 and 12 now.
Yeah.
So they are old enough now that I can leave them for an evening and go off to a social event. Hopefully. I mean, I'm not worried about, you know, external problems, more that they'll kill each other. It's two boys fighting. But you know, I do feel that, you know, there is life after parenthood. There's life after you move. You can always reinvent yourself. I'm 52, and in some ways, with all the things I'm doing now, I feel almost as if my life is just getting started.
Yeah.
And it's exciting. Life has become, do you see what it says on my T-shirt?
The adventure begins.
Yeah. I saw this in a shop a couple of weeks ago, and I thought, yeah.
Yeah.
That's life. So I'm going to buy that. So brilliant. All good. Let's move on to a second time of your life. So what can you tell us about?
Okay. So I had a unique childhood. Well, not unique, but I moved an awful lot. And I suppose that's why community is so important to me, because when you move a lot, you're constantly leaving people and having to meet new people. Like, as you said, when trying to integrate, when you're not at the beginning, you know, I had to integrate quite a lot. And as a result, a lot of my childhood was in front of the TV. Just before I started my GCSEs, I randomly got invited by a friend for a, you know, we were 13, 14, but it was like we were going out Friday night to the town square. And it just sparked this period of being out and being with my friends. And, you know, sometimes I did get in trouble because I'd been out too much or wasn't very well behaved. And my mum sees that time as Gemma went off the rails and, you know, I couldn't stop her. And when I look back at it, I think I didn't do anything wrong. I really just made friends and spent time with friends. And I would love to go and revisit that summer holidays. We did do some silly things. Me and my friend Zoe decided we were going to go shopping in Luton, and we lived in Wellingborough, so that was quite a trek for some 14-year-old girls. I don't think her mum knew we'd gone to Luton. It was just really exciting. But when I think about why it was good, it's the friendship and the freedom.
Yeah.
Nothing really can replace those things.
It's a subject we've touched on a few times on this podcast. People often hark back to that period of their lives. I think you've got this thing where you're a child and you're 11, 12, you're allowed out on your own, but you're not allowed out till after dark and such like. And it, you reach this point where you're in your mid-teens, where, and maybe you're starting to get some of your own money then as well, because mm-hmm. you might have a part-time job or something like that. And suddenly you're old enough to go off and do this stuff.
Yeah.
And you might, okay, you might be doing your GCSEs or whatever it is at that time, but you've got this narrow window of about maybe 2 or 3 years before the reality of adulthood kicks in.
Yeah.
And those are the golden years. I'm guessing maybe I would say in my case, it was probably age sort of 16 to 19. But I think maybe about 2 or 3 years for each person. And it's, wouldn't it be wonderful if you could recapture or capture that spirit and stay like that your whole life? I mean, yes. Some people do, but then maybe if you did stay that like your whole life, then by the time you got to your 30s or 40s, you might be in a bit of a mess.
Yeah.
And we all know people that kind of never grew up. And I mean, responsibility in some ways is a bad thing. We do take it on, but in other ways it gives us security.
Yeah. I think we as adults would be happier if some of the elements from our childhood we kept, such as like when you're a teenager, your friends are just really important to you. And I heard somebody say that the issue isn't so much that children today are spending too much time on technology. Children are doing what they have always done, and that is want to be with their peers. If their peers are online, they'll be online. If their peers are at the park, they'll be at the park. And I thought, yes, that is so true. It's still a community and a gathering. It just happens to usually be on places like Fortnite now. But most of the kids are playing with friends on there. And we may look at our children and go, oh, you're isolating yourself. You're just playing games. But they sort of have their own community there as well.
And I think they have to develop at their own rate. I was worried with my two that they weren't going to interact with people, that there was a period where all they wanted to do was watch YouTube or play various games online. But they've surprised me this summer because they've really both spread their wings. My older son plays tennis to quite a decent standard, and he's been going down the tennis club all the time. And also then starting to go out, into town of an afternoon during the school holidays. And he seems to be with a decent bunch of lads. I mean, they're not getting up to any mischief as far as I know. and the younger one, for example, he's just started going to the swimming pool at the weekend in the afternoons with some of our friends. They're all aged about 12. So give him £5 to get in and get a drink and whatever. And he goes up there on his bike, he locks his bike up, and it's wonderful because you take care of these children for so long and you feel like you've got to do every single thing for them, mm-hmm. and which you still do to some extent, because and then you see them starting to take these first steps towards independence, the thought that they're actually going to a shop and paying for things with their own money, and it's you can't imagine that they would get to that point, and then suddenly they do. So I am encouraged with mine, and I do encourage them to go out and do these things. So, and it gives me a bit of a break as well.
Yeah.
The only thing is, because I found during the summer holidays, it would leave me confined to the house a lot of the time, because they go off out somewhere and I don't know when they're going to come back. So I can't, because look, I've got to go shopping for a couple of hours because they've gone off on their bikes and, I'm like manning the home base, just
in
case
they pop to the shop and they come home and then they're like, "Where were you?
Yeah.
Where were you?"
Like, the house is locked up. I can't get in. Panic.
You just went to the shop.
Yeah.
But
they're back at school now, so I can get on and do things. I got quite a lot of work done over the summer, actually. I just finished one novel. I'm halfway through writing another one. I've become really productive as well lately.
That's good.
I don't know if it's got more, because I've got more time, or I'm just more motivated. I think I'm more motivated. You know, all the things talked about earlier with, the adventure begins and life moving forward. When you've got that mojo, it's amazing what you can achieve.
Yeah.
So, you've got all these thoughts and, things you want to get out there. I get it out through my writing. You've talked about potentially having a platform on YouTube or something yourself, because yes. you've got a lot to say about things too, which we may move on to in the next part of the podcast. So let's go on to question number three. One more place or time you've been that you'd like to go to again.
So this goes back to I was 15 and being a bit independent, I took myself to London for the day, and I did that quite a few times. I'd just go into London, maybe go shopping and get a tube here and there, and I felt so grown up.
It was so exciting going to London the first time. I mean, just little things like the first time you go on the tube.
But going on my own, we'd only ever driven into London. I'd never got the train or tubes. Literally, I was 15 on my own the first time I went on a tube. But I had gone to meet a friend, and I'd had a couple of things I wanted to do in the day, and I found myself with this window where I didn't really know what to do with myself. I happened to pass the National Art Gallery, which had free entry, and I went in there just because it was free and just because I wanted to kill some time. And I walked in and they happened to have a show on about Irish politics and from the potato famine and onwards. And the leader of the Irish Land League parties, my great-great-granddad.
Okay.
So he might be great-great-great-granddad. So I just walked in to this art gallery to find pictures of Charles Stuart Parnell, my great-great-uncle. And they had quite a lot of information about him. I still have the leaflets that I'd taken one of the leaflets that they were giving about the Irish politics that had happened. And I just remember, like, I literally walked in here on a random, and although there's a statue of my great-great-uncle, no one's heard of him. He's not well-known in any way, shape or form. I've had literally one person in my entire life who's heard of him. So I really wasn't expecting to go in and be like, wow, this is literally my family.
Amazing to see a part of your own heritage like that. So he would have lived, what, mid-19th century?
He was born in 1845, I think.
So that would have been around the time of the potato famine. That was 1840s, wasn't it?
Yeah. So I think his political sort of movement did start in regards to the potato famine. So I found out, bearing in mind, I am someone who has been boycotting things that I don't like since I was a child. When I went to college and did business in my early 20s, I looked at the marketing and was like, this is a massive invasion, the way that you try and sell us things. And I remember specifically being very disturbed that Tesco knows so much about you.
Yeah.
They've predicted pregnancies in like young girls and before that they've actually got pregnant based on shopping habits. They film you to see where you look. And that, I boycotted them.
Yeah, I mean, just to pick up on that point, this is one of the reasons why I left the industry. Because I worked in market research and marketing, and I did work in Tesco head office for 2 or 3 years in the early to mid 1990s.
Wow.
And yes, everything you're saying is true. It was around the time that the club card was being launched, and the big excitement
by that another couple that set up. That's actually a separate company.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
They marketed it. You can save money on your shopping, but the excitement there was, we're going to know everything about our customers because it's all on this card.
Yeah.
And that was the beginning of it.
Yeah.
So I felt uncomfortable with that even then.
Yeah.
I've come out the other side of that. And similar to yourself, I resist all this invasion of our privacy. So, but having been on the other side, it's always a bit of a poacher turned gamekeeper type scenario. But yeah, carry on.
So I've always, I can remember from the age of 5 or 6 having conversations with my granddad about politics, the world we live in. And there were a lot of things that even when I was really young that I was like, but that doesn't make sense. That's not fair. My granddad always said I'd make a great prime minister. And I'd always say, I don't know anything about politics. and he'd go even better.
I'm not sure some of the previous incumbents did either.
But I have always, I don't know how to explain it, but I'm more bothered by the fact that a lot of people are going through something bad other than something bad is happening to me. So I get very frustrated that, so when I was a young mum, because I was 17 when I had my first son, and I was looking to be rehoused by the council, and they were like, well, we've got a housing shortage and blah, blah, blah. I wasn't annoyed that it was a struggle for me to get a house. I was annoyed that it was a struggle for everyone, that there wasn't more funding being put into this, etc., etc. So I've always grown up like that. And I did know about Charles from a young age because my granddad taught me about him. But I never knew what he stood for. I never knew what side of politics he was on or any of that. So it's been in the last couple of years that something has sparked me to learn about him. And I started learning about him, and I'm so proud because he started the boycott. The word boycott comes from him. So back in the potato famine, a lot of the landlords were demanding high rents, and a lot of the farmers who were struggling to produce anything were being evicted. And he turned around and goes, no, you don't pay your rent. Well, pay the rent that... Don't pay the rent increase. So pay the rent that is a fair rent and stay in your house and keep producing. Because if we kick all the farmers out because there's been a famine, things are only going to get worse. And it was Charles Boycott that was one of the landlords. And Charles Parnell, there was leaflets and all kinds of things going around at the time. It's like, don't pay him. So it became a boycott. It was named after Charles Boycott.
So that's where the word comes from.
Yeah, so
there you go, listeners. I'm learned something today.
A descendant from someone who did a big boycotting thing. And they also, he's the leader of the Irish Parliamentary Party and the Irish Home Rule, I think. And they even took some of it to America. So there's Parnells in America because they went over there to help with a lot of the Irish people that were having housing problems in New York and in America. And I think they did go to America partly because of the famine. So I made more sense when I learned about him. But what was even better was learning about his sister. And my first thought was, oh yeah, so I've grown up knowing all about Charles because Charles is a man, but his sisters, who have done some amazing things, haven't been talked about as much. Now, it actually turns out that people didn't really know about Anna until 1986, when one of her books was discovered. She was also the leader of the Irish Land League. She was leader... back in, the late 1800s, she raised the £60,000 to help people pay their rent and eat.
That's an enormous amount of money in that time. And
they were quite wealthy landowners.
Yeah.
And she actually chose a life of poverty in the end. And she, despite being quite wealthy, she really, really fought for no one to be struggling in that much poverty. Yeah.
Now, I was going to, because the fourth question, which we were going to come on to, was I was going to ask you who you'd like to be for a day if you could be someone. Now, was I right in thinking it was Anna that you wanted to talk about for that question? So we're sort of, we've seeded seamlessly into between three and four there.
Yeah.
So tell us a bit more about what perhaps it would have been like or what you imagine it would have been like if you could have gone and been there.
I'd like to, I can't really begin to imagine. I'm very curious as to how someone who's just quite wealthy becomes so politically minded to help the poor. What experiences did they have? I'm aware that although they were quite wealthy, the famine had sort of started to decrease their income, but they were still absolutely fine. Charles moved over to England as an MP to go to Parliament, and Anna moved to Devon Another one of the sisters moved to America. But so Anna
was Charles' sister?
Sister, yeah, yes. Okay. And they are very, there's only a couple of years between them. My memory's not great with details. Anna ended up choosing a life of poverty, and she was a radical feminist before the suffragettes. And there's a quote from a famous suffragette that women should wear short skirts, like practical short skirts and boots, because women have every right to go and need to be practical and not wear these huge dresses where they can't do anything because they're a woman and that's what women should do. And there's a famous speech where they talk about that, and that literally stems from Anna, who died a few years before the suffragette movement happened, and she died quite young. So she probably would have been a suffragette.
Yes.
So she wrote a book called The Great Sham, which I haven't read yet. And there's also a book called The Petticoat Rebellion, which is the Anna Parnell story.
Is it possible to get hold of these books?
Yes.
They're not out of print or there are copies around?
There's copies. There's one on Amazon. I'm really looking forward to ordering and reading them and learning. And up until I learned about this, which it was been very recently, I didn't make sense to myself. Why am I so... I thought it was my problem. People were like, oh, you shouldn't care so much about other people and the world and society. And now I'm like, no, maybe that is my place.
Yeah.
But what I've found very interesting is they were wealthy landowners. They were politically, like, moved to help people. And then... So Charles got remarried to someone in England. So I actually come from that bastardised side of the family because he'd had an affair and got remarried. And then I come from that remarried family. So they had children who had children. And my granddad's siblings all went to Oxford or Cambridge University. My granddad was the youngest, and his dad died just before he went to uni, so he couldn't afford to go to Oxford or Cambridge. Now, my granddad earned £30 an hour in the early 70s. He wasn't poor, but he wasn't, like, wealthy.
I mean, that's a good wage now.
It really is, yeah. In the 70s. And then he had my mum, who became a bookkeeper and a single mum. And then I was a young mum and a single mum. And it is crazy how literally 100 years, a couple of generations, so much can change. And I think that it's almost like, I sort of believe in that we come here, like maybe we have a soul mission. That mission might be tiny, but I feel that it's almost important that I was born into a sort of poor young mum thing.
Yeah.
I don't want to say like I believe that I was Anna in any way, but it's like, you know, we had Anna who was fighting for something, and now I can, maybe it's me that continues that,
it's
but
like
from a different perspective.
Passing on the baton in a relay race.
Yes. And
interesting that you say that much has changed since that period. However, when you look at the problems we face as a society,
so similar.
Really, there are always parallels. I mean, you talked about the
rent.
Yeah, I mean, you talked about the withholding of the rent, but I recall when there was much talk about the energy bills recently. I know they've just done a cap. You know, they've capped it at much higher than it was, but there was a campaign going around where people were saying from October the 1st, don't pay your energy bills.
Yes.
And it made me think of that because it's the same sort of thing.
Yes.
And again, I don't want to get too much into the subject of women's rights because it is quite a controversial topic but there is much to fight for. I was quite impressed by your amused by the thing about the short skirts, because I must have imagined that. I remember, you know, when the mini skirt and stuff came in the 60s, that scandalised the older generation. But a woman wearing short skirts in sort of late Victorian times, I can imagine a lot of sort of angry letters to the Daily Mail or the Times from people scandalised by that.
Yes, there was a lot of people who didn't like her. They were Protestant, and Anna actually gave a speech for You know when people give a speech to say, look, we have this candidate and I'm recommending this candidate. Yeah. She gave a speech recommending one of the Sinn Féin candidates back then.
Yeah.
And me really not knowing about the history, I was like, I wanted to research, like, were they fighting for something good or were they fighting for a political ideal that I don't like? Or when I did learn, I'm extremely proud to be part of that.
Well, it's all such a complex situation to go back and find all these things out. And I know you feel quite politically minded. We talked before and you want to have your own platform, and that inspiration from your own history, maybe, you know, you've been very busy bringing up your four children.
Mm-hmm.
You perhaps have a lot to do and you haven't even started yet. So,
yes.
So that would be interesting. Yeah.
Yes.
To hear your thoughts and see where you go with that. So
I have a TikTok, account, Earth and Anarchy. I don't necessarily think I see the word anarchy as maybe a lot of other people see it, but it's just freedom to be in a way and following your heart. And I do want to use that platform to talk more, but I don't think TikTok's really the right
possibly not. I mean, I'm quite a believer in YouTube because it is so universal and a lot of people use it. I know there is much talk of censorship.
Yeah,
and there are certain topics that I know I'm not going to mention them because it will get your video banned. But I know a lot of people have been removed off the platform for discussing certain, shall we say, hot topics of the last couple of years. So we'll move on to the last question. If you could go anywhere in space or time and see what the world was like, where would you go?
Okay, so, well, part of me wants to go to the past and the future. For the same reason, I want to go to a point in the past where, like, we always talk about how did we get into this state where we have so much poverty, where we have people being excluded, where people have to work in jobs they hate, like, where there's toxins around us and people are saying this isn't safe. The world's just crazy, okay?
I know.
People go, you know, oh, things went wrong when this happened or when this happened. And I'd like to go back to a point in the past where people didn't feel that the world they lived in was terrible. And I'd like to, just so I can sort of learn, I just want to go back and like, oh, the reason we, you know, we weren't really all depressed is because we didn't have this issue or and because we did it this way. And in the same way, I'd like to go into the future. Now, when I read a book, I get into a few pages and I like to read the last page. And everybody says that I am, you can't do that. You can't go and read the last page. But it doesn't give you all the answers. There's still a big, how do we get there? How do we get from this part of the story to that part of the story? In the same way, I'd like to go to the future, to when the world is a nice place for all of us, or for the many of us. And then just so I can bring that information back. And I genuinely can't think of anywhere in time or space I'd rather go. I would just like the answers.
Yeah.
It might be something none of us have ever thought of. And suddenly you could bring that information back and suddenly we know the goal that we're working towards. I think now the problem we have, and this is why, another reason why it doesn't, I don't want it to be too political, but it's almost like we're all right. Because we all want a better world. We just don't all have the same vision of how that works.
Yeah.
And without being able to know what works, how do we actually know that what we're doing is going to get us there?
Okay. So there's a few things there. Firstly, I'm just thinking about you going to the last page of the book.
Sorry.
And maybe think about my first time bubble book, because if you went to the last page of that book, it literally is the end of everything. And this is probably not a spoiler, I don't think, because most people have read the books. The last page of the first time bubble book is billions of years in the future and the earth being swallowed up by the sun. So it's about the most final end of a book you could possibly have. So how did I manage to write 12 sequels? Well, there you go. But no, interesting. So we talk about going back to this this idyllic image of the past. And it's just something I think about a lot. And it's something we're sold on television. It's almost like the Darling Buds of May routine. So the original series of that, this golden era of the 1950s when everyone was happy. Or another one would be a more recent show, Lark Rise to Candleford, which is set in that late 19th century period we're talking about, where it's all rural and everyone's happy. And I like to believe that existed, but I think we are
romanticising it.
We are, because when you look at something like Lark Rise to Candleford, you know, they're all wearing all fine garments and living this idyllic lifestyle. But in reality, if you look at photographs from that period, you'll see most of the children haven't even got any shoes on.
Yes.
So it's perhaps not as wonderful as it seems. And in terms of the future, this is another thing that is somewhat disappointing, because we were all sold a vision of the future that things were going to get better. That was the thing in 1997, Tony Blair's triumphant thing. It was done to that song, and everyone was like, oh yeah, you know, everything's going to get better now. Where, you know, I mean, regardless of whether you're left or right wing, but that generally that there was this idea that technology was going to make life easier. Everyone was going to be happy. All the problems, there weren't going to be any wars or racism or anything like that. And the fact of the matter is, it's actually got worse since then. I would like yourself, I'd love to be able to jump, say, 50 or 100 years into the future and see that we had resolved all these issues. But my fear is that we won't. And that's not me being necessarily black-pilled or pessimistic. Yeah. It's just that human nature and greed and the desire for power will never really be overcome. And I even think that now we live in this cozy world where, you know, we think we're safe. But you've only got to look back to the Second World War and atrocities that were committed there, and ones committed on other wars more recently, to know. I mean, I find it hard to understand how can anybody do such evil things. But
yeah,
that's still in human nature, and it's in people out there. And I think it's a very complex thing for us to unpick. And I would love to go 100 years in the future and see it was all wonderful.
We did find an answer somewhere.
But I think we've got a lot of work to do. Sorry to depress the listeners.
The idea of a resource-based economy where we don't even have money or need money, that's not necessarily... There can still be flaws with that. And I think it's such a big change that not everyone can even comprehend how it will... I talk about it quite a lot, and I can't even comprehend how it would actually play out and work. But that's why I want to go sort of to the past and the future.
Yeah.
Because I feel that somewhere there's some answers. And maybe... I'm not saying I really want to see the world being perfect.
Yeah.
But I do feel that we can do better. We can do a lot better.
We can, but we've all got to want to do it. And the problem is, I mean, there's been much talk about a cashless society and where money's abolished, which generally I've been opposed to. Because the problem is, even if we had that society and say it was all... It's still going to be based on people's status in some way or another. So even if there was no money, there would still be people who would be, I want to be the one with the super yacht and the status and the power. Even if there's no money, those very rich people more or less do control the world. And I can't imagine a scenario where they're going to get shifted from that position anytime soon, because they've been doing it for centuries.
Yeah. And I think when I'm talking to people, and I feel everyone has this idea that, they have a short time frame on changes. And I feel that if we had any type of radical change, it's going to take a few generations for people's mindset to change. For example, if we had a resource-based economy, at first, there's a lot of people that are very used to having the comfort of, look what I've got. And it will take a couple of generations for people to be like, well, everyone can go and get anything they want, so me having something flash doesn't provide me with any any sort of emotions.
No, and I think a lot of us do have that mindset to some extent.
I don't think Ferraris would exist.
No.
And, you know, every car that you bought would be good quality, long lasting, because there's no like competition either. You can get the best minds working together.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful concept. Whether it's something that we can achieve, and even if we could achieve it, it will take generations.
It will take generations. And I think this is one of the problems with a lot of the policies that we're trying to do now, is that everything in politics is short term.
Mm-hmm.
So a politician has got to say things that are going to get them through to the next election. So the big thing with the green agenda is, okay, we're going to be carbon neutral by 2030 and we're going to have all the petrol cars off the road 2030, because they think that's what people want to hear. Now, obviously, in the long term, for the sustainability of the planet, we have to have a society that is based on renewable sources.
Mm-hmm.
But because it's the hot topic, they're trying to push it through too fast. Yeah. So I think it's like, say, for example, when the car was invented, say, right at the end of the 19th century, they'd say, okay, car's been invented now, so we don't need horses anymore, so we're going to get rid of all of them by 1910.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So, which didn't happen. People were still using horses and carts 1940s, 1950s. You have to allow technology to develop at its own pace. And we are wonderful, inventive human beings. We can make all this happen, but we can't force it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we're going to screw everything up. And that's what's happening now. That's why people are going, why are my electricity bills so high? And it's because we're following this route, and we're doing it too quickly. So we can have the answers. We can create the world we want, but we have to let it happen naturally.
Yeah.
As we always have through history.
Yeah.
The pace has sped up, and they're trying to speed it up more and more and more, and it's too much. So, okay, well, I think that sort of brings us to an end. That's been a really interesting chat. We weren't sure before we started if we were going to find much to talk about, but we have done.
Yes.
Well, we always do, don't we?
Yes.
See, I often think that even not having a formal like this, you could just have a podcast where you just met up for a coffee every week and just had a chat. Not even remember that the microphone's on.
Do you know what? If we were having a coffee or something sometime and it was just like secretly recorded, I bet there'd be some wonderful conversations.
Because we've had many wonderful conversations.
Yeah, there's a few of like, oh, Ricky. I wish I could reword that exactly how it happened, like when I was talking to Jason, because...
I know, but it's the trouble. You can never recreate something. It's like trying to recreate the perfect night out and things that we've talked about on here before, but... No, anyway, that's great. Thank you for coming along.
Thank you for having me.
And you're very welcome. And I hope, you know, that you do build a platform of your own. And when you do, let me know and I will promote it for you. So thank you very much, and see you again soon.
Okay, bye.
Bye.